Welcome to the podcast. It's Pat and Stu in for some guy, Glenn Beck. He's going to be back in, I don't know, a week or so from his lengthy getaway. This time he's going to Australia as part of the charity, and it's going to be he's going to have some really great stories coming back from that. By the way, you can subscribe to blazetv.com. Use the promo code GLEN20. Save $20. That's still active from our Ilhan Omar special, so why not save the 20? It's GLEN20 at blazetv.com. Today on the podcast, we're talking about the debates. Fallout is still kind of going on. What's interesting about this is you get these follow-up comments now. They're doing interviews afterwards, making statements, contradicting themselves, contradicting what they've been telling us for years and years and years, especially with stuff like Obamacare. We go over that today.
We talk about fat lump Michael Moore, claiming that Michelle Obama would easily defeat Donald Trump in the election. And I think he might be right.
He's not the only one who's saying that.
She's got like 73% approval ratings.
It would be interesting to see if this race fell apart. Like, they nominated Elizabeth Warren and she's losing by 18 points. Does she drop out?
And they draft Michelle Obama.
It's not impossible.
No.
Also, you have there's some new fast food developments that you need to know about that we hit today. The return of the National Football League was last night.
Oh.
And just made us feel so special.
Kevin.
I love it. I know. Wow, you should protest it. I can't. I'm not capable of avoiding the NFL. I'm sorry.
No, me neither.
We'll get into that and a lot more on the podcast today.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
See MSNBC, Pat. I know you watch it every day.
Oh man,
Pat's a huge fan.
I can't go a day without, you know, to me, a day without MSNBC is like a day without orange juice or whatever. Wait, sunshine.
A day without
a moonlight. Cloud cover. That's what it is.
A day without cloud cover.
A day without MSNBC is like a day without cloud cover.
That's their new slogan, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think I did see that.
If it's not, it should be.
It should be. So they were a little upset. The Democrats went after Barack Obama this week. Listen.
It was more like Gulliver's Travels. I mean, there was Vice President Biden tied down after rope for his long political career. He had to defend every element of it, going back, as Michael Bennett said, back 50 years on issues like busing. It was very hard for him to play defense. He was 100% better, or maybe 200% better than he was in the first debate. He seemed to be aware he was in a debate, which was a start for him. And I thought he was reciting a lot of stuff. In fact, a lot of times when he got to the end of his time, it was like he ran out of his recitation.
And the weirdest thing to me, which I'm having a hard time with, is it a smart strategy to attack the Obama administration? I mean, this is a Democratic president elected twice. I think he's the only Democrat we've had, you know, with the margins he's had since FDR that did that. Remains wildly popular in the Democratic Party.
It was weird for me to watch about almost 40 minutes of primarily attacks on the Obama administration's policies. It was odd. It's almost as if the debate forgot who's president. Because the attacks on Donald Trump, I don't remember his name being mentioned that much. And so it was odd for me for these candidates to debate changes in health care and their different policies on immigration as if Trump doesn't exist.
Yes, they were attacking the Obama administration.
Yeah,
they were.
Yes.
They spent a lot of time doing that.
I think
if you're a Democratic candidate for president and you spend you're not making progress.
It is weird. It's a weird approach. And I guess I don't know what you do. Right. If you're one of these opponents, what do you say you're going to do that's going to be better than Biden if you say the Obama administration was great? It's a tough sell. But I mean, Barack Obama's approval rating, he's among Democrats. There's a bunch of polls here. 83 to 10 approval rating, 88 to 10, 83, 13, 90 to 7. He's a very popular guy
in the Democratic Party.
Yeah. He's not you know, overall, he does well overall, but not nearly that well, obviously. I mean, you know, these are really good numbers. He's probably the most popular Democrat in America, with the maybe exception of Michelle Obama, right? His wife.
Yeah.
I mean, that couple is probably the two most popular people in the entire Democratic Party.
Which was mentioned by fat lump Michael Moore again. He said it in another interview.
Is that his name? Is that on his business card?
Michael is now his middle name. Fat Lump is first and second. He's got two middle names.
So he's Fat Lump Michael Moore.
Fat Lump Michael Moore, yeah. He said that there's only one candidate up to the challenge to beat President Trump. In fact, he thinks she'd crush President Trump. He says that candidate is Michelle Obama. Everybody watching this right now knows she's beloved, and she would go in there and she would beat him.
I think we have the audio of this. You want to hear this?
Yeah.
Okay, here. Audio of Michael Moore talking about Michelle Obama running for president.
Who's the street fighter that can crush Trump? And frankly, I think there's a person that could do this. If the election were held today, there is one person that would crush Trump, and she hasn't announced yet. And her last name rhymes with Obama.
In fact,
it is Obama. Michelle Obama. Everybody watching this right now knows she is a beloved American, and she would go in there and she would beat him. She would beat him in the debates. He wouldn't be able to bully her. He wouldn't be able to nickname her. And she is beloved. Just go to C-SPAN and follow her book tour across the country. She's playing 15,000-seat arenas in the Midwest. They have to turn people away. She takes the stage, and she's so powerful and so good. You just look at that, and you think, of course, she could win. But everyone's now saying, well, of course, she's not going to run. Well, has anyone asked her?
Yes.
I think if she were asked,
if you watch the book tour, she's asked every stop.
We have to come back to you. You have to go back to the White House. Your country needs you. If asked to serve, I believe she would serve.
Well, except for
if you were asked to serve, or I were, whatever our skill set is, wouldn't we do that?
I can't take any more Michael Moore today. I
think some of what he says is true, though. She's really popular for some reason. I don't understand it, but she is.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan myself. I will say, though, it's rare when Michael Moore agrees wholeheartedly with Bill O'Reilly. This is exactly what Bill said about the election. He said if they run a Michelle Obama, she would win by a lot. I think there's
I'm
a good
afraid
argument.
Of that. Yeah,
there's
I'm
a good argument to be made there. I mean, you have to, when you've never seen someone run for president, there's a big unknown factor of how they actually react in that sort of pressure situation. And she's obviously been in this world for a while, but she's never been the focus of it. And when she was the focus of it in the first campaign, she did not do well. If you remember, they pulled her off the campaign because she kept saying things like, I'm not proud of my country until today.
Right. She doesn't exactly love America, seemingly. Mm. I mean, you know, like you said, she was proud for the first time when her husband was nominated for president. That was her first pride in this country.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and if you like what you hear on the program, you should check out Pat Gray Unleashed. His podcast is available wherever you download your favorite podcast.
The squad is fascinating because they can say kind of anything and get away with it because their only approach to life is to tell you how they've been victimized. Mm-hmm. So every story that goes on with the squad always comes back to how they're a terrible victim. You know, like there was a sign of this from the staffers of Kamala Harris this week. Mm-hmm. When Kamala Harris and Joe Biden walked to the center stage, obviously Harris kind of hammered Biden in the first debate. Biden walks up to him, a nice moment. He says, go easy on me, kid. What was the reaction from the Kamala Harris staffers? Kid? She's a senator. How dare you refer to her an accomplished woman breaking a glass ceiling as a kid? This just constant victimization. She won the battle and is still
asinine.
The victim, right?
Yeah.
It's just nonsensical. And this is the attitude of the squad all the time. They're always the victim. Someone's always oppressing them. There's always a man there to push them down.
Mm-hmm.
They can't, despite the fact that we're talking about a person who was a bartender a year and a half ago and is running the Democratic Party. That person is telling you that they are oppressed. The same thing with Kirsten Gillibrand on stage. Oh, gosh. I mean, she's not part of the squad, however. But she says, oh, gosh, you know what? I'm the right person to be nominated as the Democratic candidate because I can go to suburban women and explain to them what white privilege is. Have you ever heard of a more demeaning statement?
Man.
And then she said, you know, I know I'm a beneficiary of white privilege. which not in the polls, you're not. I don't know where.
In fact, so far, she's not part of the next debate.
No.
Because she is not qualified. She's not close to qualifying.
No.
I think she's
on
been,
either one.
I think she's been over 2% in one poll. Right,
yeah, and
but she doesn't have 130,000 donations.
Donors, and you need both in this next debate. So 130,000 individual donors, plus you have to hit 2%, and I believe it's four polls. Now, there's going to be a lot of polls before here and there, but there's only certain ones that qualify. So even if she hit 2% before this previous debate, that wouldn't count. It's going to be something that leading up to this next one. Can she get some additional support? It's possible, but she's a disaster. And the squad, you know, look, they're very well known, but very unpopular. I mean, Ilhan Omar has a 9% approval rating. AOC's at like 20. People know them very well. They just
don't like them.
And so AOC was on a radio show talking about marginalized communities. And I think she, look, marginalized communities, again, marginalized, whoever she's talking about is the victim.
Victim.
And there's only one thing that they can do in this victimized situation. Listen.
That by marginalizing Palestinians, you create safety. Mm-hmm. I believe that injustice is a threat to the safety of all people, because once you have a group that is marginalized and marginalized and marginalized, then you create a population. Like, once someone doesn't have access to clean water, they have no choice but to riot, right?
Oh, wrong. No. Remember the riots of Flint, Michigan? When they didn't have access to clean water, they just went nuts. They just went ape crap and just started burning down that city. It doesn't even exist today in Michigan. There used to be, there's just a hole where Flint, Michigan was.
And they were pretty pissed about that.
Yeah, they were.
Interestingly enough, I've heard over and over again for years Flint, Michigan was the result of this, I think, a Republican conspiracy to either kill African Americans or at the very least, just because they wanted evil profits or something. What we find out, by the way, on Flint, Michigan, is their system with Detroit was actually working pretty well. They had a long-term lease with water from Detroit. It was working pretty well. The water was cheap. But they decided to change that. Why did they decide to change that? Shovel-ready jobs. You see, they had to build a brand new pipeline for the water. And they were able to use stimulus to come in and say, oh, well, we can, not only are we going to get new water supply, but we'll also create a bunch of jobs for people to work on this pipeline. So when they implemented that, it was something they didn't need. They implemented it because of the government, because of a Keynesian economic argument of stimulus. They decided to build these things. That's when everything got screwed up. So this is not a, and Republicans and Democrats agreed, by the way, to do this, because Republicans no longer care about arguments on economics. It's not a thing anymore. But Republicans came on and said, yeah, we need new shovel-ready jobs. And Democrats came on and said, yeah, we need new shovel-ready jobs. So they built this pipeline, and wow, did that turn out well.
Yeah. Well, like the president at the time said.
Shovel-ready was not as... shovel ready as we expected.
That's funny. I love it when they screw up policy like that. They lie to us, right to our faces.
Right to our faces.
It's so funny. So speaking of AOC and how people have no choice but to riot if they don't have access to clean water. That's one of her incredible thoughts of the last year.
Yeah.
Prospect magazine has deemed her one of the world's top 50 thinkers.
No.
Of the year.
No, they did not.
One of the year's top.
Don't say it.
50
thinkers. No.
Is that amazing?
Top 50 thinkers. She doesn't even know the requirements of her own job.
What's this thing in my sink? When I flip a switch, it growls. I'm scared. Like, Israel is like, I don't know, like whatever. Yeah, she's really thoughtful. She's really brilliant.
I mean, look, you can definitely make the argument she's influential.
Yes, but
she is not a thinker.
She doesn't know anything. She's butt stupid, this woman.
The only thing of substance that she's actually produced was the FAQ for her Green New Deal, which is... She herself has denied. She is now she has thrown to the sidelines and acted as if she somehow mistakenly wrote it. It's like, you don't mistakenly write things. That's not how writing works. You can't mistake. Oh, I mistakenly wrote this novel. Oops! Look at this. It's a spy thriller. Oh, how did that happen? When you write things, it's intentional.
Well, she chisels her thoughts into stone, so she can't take it back.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's no erasing it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Because I mean, this is. And remember,
you thought she was maybe using a word processor or something?
No. Because they said, "Oh, that was half baked. We weren't done with that yet." Well, first of all. I mean, it showed, right? It was a terrible.
Yes, it
was not only ridiculous ideas, like, you know, retrofit
every building in
America.
The country.
Yep, to put high speed rail to every place that airplanes fly.
Eliminate air flight within 10 years.
Within 10 years, get rid of all automobiles. We're talking about free jobs for everyone who's willing to work. I think
or even unwilling.
And then they still get paid. I think
yeah.
You still get paid if you're unwilling. And this all came out, and how did, you know, it wasn't one of these things where every once in a while you get this thing where, you know, the Blaze uncovers this hidden document. You know, it was sent to us by a source. They sent it to NPR. They were proud of this. They sent the FAQ. This is the one that also said, we can't quite solve cow farts yet. They sent this to NPR to tell them how to cover it. And then tried to deny later on that this was just a draft. Well, where was the final product? You never came out with a final product. They didn't have a final product. This was the final product.
And they were just embarrassed at the ridicule they received.
And they deserved every bit of it.
Oh, you know, absolutely.
That was one of the things, too, by the way, Andrew Yang said in the debate that no one really pointed out. Yang pointed out something that we've noted many times here, which is the U.S. is only 15% of global emissions. 15%.
Yeah.
Okay.
They don't like to hear that.
They don't like to hear that because if you put it this way, the entire transportation sector of the United States is about 20% of our total emissions. Okay. Mm-hmm. All cars, trucks, the entire transportation sector. Okay. If you turned it off, if you had a switch and you were able to just flip it off like a light switch, the entire transportation goes carbon free tomorrow, you would save 3% of global emissions. Three. China is growing at between 1.5% and 2% per year. So you would have, you would wipe out the gains, you know, whatever to gain from AOC's, you know, turning off the transportation sector idea, it would be wiped out by China in 2 years.
Unbelievable.
And we're talking about something that's impossible.
And
just
yet,
turning off the transportation
sector. She's one of the
sector.
World's top 50 thinkers.
Right.
Crazy.
Come on now.
They write, the voluminous coverage of 29-year-old Ocasio-Cortez, who was elected to Congress last November, is focused on her youth and personality, certainly her campaigning skills, mastery of social media, and Bronx story are striking. But what's most interesting about her meteoric political career is that her success is based on ideas.
Is it?
Yeah. It was her manifesto, healthcare for all, tuition-free university, and a federal jobs program that set her on her path.
Wait a minute. Bernie Sanders proposed all of those things
before she was even
born, and
ran
for president and finished second last time.
Jeez. But they do admit she's the force behind the Green New Deal, which is embarrassing,
mm-hmm.
and has put taxes and how much the rich pay back on the American political agenda.
Always been in the political
agenda.
Nobody
ever talks about how much the rich pay. Because if people actually knew how much they pay, they'd be flabbergasted. They'd be stunned that they pay 45% or 50% or sometimes 55%, depending on what state you live in. You could pay up to 60% in taxes. I think that would shock a lot of people.
Yeah, they went back and they did a poll several years ago as to not just should we raise taxes on the rich, but what's the amount that's okay to charge them? And people were like, well, you know, should it be more than 5%? Should it be more than 10%? And they go up the whole thing.
Yeah.
And most people, the majority of people said it shouldn't be more than 25%.
It shouldn't be
more. That's wrong to go over 25%. Most people believe, because of the way that people talk about this, that they pay zero.
Right.
Right? Because they'll say like, well, Amazon paid zero in taxes. And so people are just like, oh, well, you know.
The rich pay.
This is what the rich pay. They're all getting away with it. They're not paying anything. And that's, of course, not true at all.
And now you get people like Bernie talking maybe 70%.
Yeah, and AOC said that as well.
Unbelievable.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Women in Saudi Arabia will no longer need the permission of a male guardian to travel.
What?
That country is going to hell in a handbasket.
Wow. They are going to... Oh, my gosh.
They can leave their house and drive around, say, Riyadh without a man? They can drive. Yes, I believe so.
This is horrible.
A few other changes that they're making right now. I mean, next they'll be telling us they can vote.
Oh, my God. No.
And then you might as well just forget it.
Then you just turn the country off.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
They're also thinking about allowing them to apply for passports.
No.
Register a marriage, divorce, or childbirth, and be issued official family documents.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
Official family documents?
Yeah.
Not rip-off replicas?
No, actually official documents issued by the kingdom.
Mm. It's interesting that this is happening. And look, first of all, it actually is really positive. Is ridiculously backward.
There have been some reforms lately.
Yeah, they've moved. It's interesting. The guy who's like capturing his relatives and holding them hostage inside the Four Seasons is a guy who's pushing for a lot of these reforms.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's gone. What seems completely ridiculous to us that they would still have these restrictions on women. It is positive. You know, progress is positive on that front, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's easy to mock, and I will mock it. But it's also positive, I guess, in some roundabout sort of way, because there's still so much negative there, it's hard to get excited about it. But I find this interesting, and I was actually watching Handmaid's Tale last night. Have you watched this?
I've never seen it.
A little dark for...
Is it HBO? Is that what it is?
It is Hulu, I believe.
Hulu, okay.
And my wife loves the show. Like, she's totally into it. Every Wednesday, I think the episodes come out, and she's like, she just disappears for an hour because she has to watch it on the night it comes out. She's that into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really well-done show. I mean, you could tell they spent a lot of money on it. And it's a great, it's a fascinating premise. I would love to see the show made in which they kind of, like a prequel series would be really fascinating. Basically, the concept is like at some point, and I'm going to butcher this if you're a fan, I'm sorry, I don't really watch the show, but at some point there was a civil war of sorts mm-hmm. in that, and somehow like a group of religious fanatics basically took the country over. Now, America, I think, still exists, but it's like only in Alaska. And the place, most of what you'd think of as America is a place called Gilead. Okay, so it's like a super religious fundamentalist place where like the guys have all the rights, the women are all basically slaves. There's something to do with like,
because we're on the verge of that right now.
Well,
am I right?
Oh my gosh,
we are just on the verge.
Men,
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's basically Mike Pence's fever dream. This is what
yes.
he wants to happen. And that's kind of why.
Well, he won't have dinner with a woman other than his wife.
Which is the same thing.
Same thing.
And there's something to do with like an infertility problem in the country.
Mm.
So I don't know what caused that. I don't know if it's clear in the actual series. But basically, there's this sort of any fertile woman is going to have a lot of issues because she's basically going to be raped over and over and over and over again by basically every
Oof.
Commander or whatever that wants to. I will say it's really hard for me to watch it at all because it's like...
It's pretty ugly.
It's basically like, think of every awful thing that could possibly be done to a woman. Here's a series about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially the entire thing. So I don't know... It's hard to watch, but it's really well done, and you know, you can understand why it's popular.
Mm-hmm.
But the real reason why it's so popular and such a media darling is exactly what we were just talking about. It's like it's a left-wing fantasy of what they think Donald Trump would do if he had complete control, right? It's like basically a statement against women have no rights right now, Me Too, and all of these other things combined to we're essentially Gilead. We're essentially this oppressed society where Donald Trump stays in power, this is happening at the end. It's kind of how I think the left looks at it. Which is fascinating, though.
And he's so fundamentally religious.
Oh, it's
there's
so
no
deep.
One more so fundamentally deep. Religious than Donald Trump.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
it goes back so far.
Look,
he's been good on a lot of those issues, but I would not say it's to his core.
No.
But anyway, so he has a... there's an episode last night where this commander guy, they're driving somewhere. I don't know the whole story, but and I'm minor spoiler alert if you're watching the series, but they're driving down this road.
Now I know somebody's driving. Great. Thanks.
crap.
Thanks for that.
I should have said spoiler alert first. So they're driving down this road, and at one point there's this big moment where, like, you know, the music builds, and this big moment where the commander says to his wife, "Do you want to drive?" And she looks at him like, "What? Drive me? I'm a woman." And they pull over and they switch seats and they put the top down and they're just driving down this road. And it's kind of like the old days. She's like remembering her freedoms of the old days and stuff. And it's like the left looks at this and says, this is what Donald Trump wants. Mm-hmm. And they don't look at it and say, this is what half the world is.
Yeah.
Right now, half the world is coming up with, you know what? Maybe we should let women drive. Maybe some of them should vote. Maybe we should see more than just their eyes.
Yeah.
Because a big part of the Handmaid's Tale is they're all dressed up in these fundamentalist ways. They're all very much covered up. You can only see their faces. It's like, you guys realize that the people you're constantly defending, you're mm-hmm. saying that we should not say their culture is worse than ours. That is happening in those places right now.
Yeah. And we were just talking about the reforms in Saudi Arabia. Yet still, the rules are in place where they require male consent for a woman to leave prison. Male consent for a woman to exit domestic abuse shelters.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine that? So your husband has to come and let you out of a domestic abuse shelter? That doesn't seem like a good idea to me.
That does seem like a problematic strategy.
They can't marry without male consent. And women, unlike men, still can't pass on citizenship to their children.
I will say in most marriages, male consent is also used here.
It's
a weird
it's
one.
Kind of true.
What do you mean? Yeah. Male? I guess unless it's two women marrying each other, male consent's always part of that package, isn't it?
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
It's Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. 888-727-BECK. Wow.
Do these things ever fade away, Pat? Is there ever a moment in which these crazy warnings and fears are ever... Is there a moment where they later on go back and say, wow, we shouldn't have been... That was pretty ridiculous.
No, they never do that.
They never do that. Like we,
never do
I mean,
that.
Really, before Trump and Pence went into the White House... There was a legitimate outward fear that Mike Pence was going to start imprisoning homosexuals.
I don't know where that came from because he wasn't really outspoken about it to my knowledge
I mean, you know, he might have had a couple comments in like the 90s when he was in Congress that they didn't like.
I think he was pro-traditional marriage. He was for marriage between a man and a woman.
And I guess because Trump, obviously not known as the most religious guy, they had to find a religious boogeyman, right? And so they picked Pence.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, oh, he's going to spend all of his time, you know, driving around cities, just picking up gay people and put them in the back of a van and then bringing them to prison.
Yeah.
Are there gay people left in our society? I'm not sure.
They're all in prison right now.
They are all in prison. Yeah, that one was true.
Yeah,
okay.
That
well, that's
true.
A bad example then.
That Pence, man, he just, first of all, he wouldn't have dinner with women that weren't his wife.
Oh, my gosh.
Then he decided to jail all the gays.
Oh, my gosh.
You can't trust that guy.
The other one I was thinking of was, remember when they warned us that Cory Booker was going to ban birth control?
Yeah.
And they ran this Cory Booker, you know, a moderate Republican senator from Colorado. He's no hardcore conservative. At no point did he ever consider trying to ban birth control. And they ran tons of ads against him saying that when he got in there, that's what he's going to do.
Right.
That was what his outcome was. He was going to go in there and try to ban birth control.
That's right, Sweet Pea. Cory Booker wants to ban birth control.
No, it was in that one. It was. That's right, Sweet Pea. Cory Booker banned birth control. There's no condoms anywhere in America.
Right.
And that's, you know, it's essentially the same thing as Handmaid's Tale, right? Like
Cory Gardner. Yeah, not Booker.
What did I say? Booker?
Did
I say
Booker?
I thought I said Gardner initially,
you
but maybe
have.
We changed it.
Yeah,
Cory Gardner banned birth control.
Cory Gardner banned birth control. Well, he did this.
They're all out.
Did you try the corner market?
Of course.
Grocery store?
Sold out.
Drug store?
Come on.
Stupid.
So everyone's sold out of condoms. How did this happen?
Cory Gardner banned birth control. And now it's all on us guys.
Wow.
And you can't find a condom anywhere.
Can't find a condom.
And the pill was just the start.
Yeah.
The Pell Grants my little brother was counting on for college.
Gone.
Cory cut them. Climate change that everyone knows is weirding our weather.
Weirding it.
Cory flat out denies it. Sweet Pea. Cory denies science.
Come on.
This guy has no idea what's going on in the real world.
That guy loved that ad.
Such a great ad.
It's so, first of all, if he's banned birth control, why are you going to all these stores?
Right.
I guess so. He's banned the pill, and condoms are theoretically available, but there's not enough.
There's been a run on them, and so Yeah, they're completely out of stock.
Because now it's all on us guys. I love that.
We shouldn't have to even think about it. Us guys, we shouldn't have to deal with it.
I love how dismissive he is of her when she asks about the drugstore.
Come on, you moron. Idiot.
Like, why would I check the gas station and the grocery store and not the drugstore, you loser? Now, you know what? Now I don't even want to have sex. Now I don't even want to have sex with you. Because you're so stupid that I can't bring myself to be
I can't
interested.
Even look at you.
I'm just not into it anymore. You're so dumb. Why would you think I wouldn't look at the drugstore? Idiot. Sweet pea.
So essentially right now, Cory Gardner has banned sex. Yeah, you just can't have
yes,
it.
Yes,
right
you can't
now.
Have it.
Yeah.
You can't just have can't have it.
So
but you can't have it because, I mean, God forbid, you know. And it's like this idea.
So nobody comes back as, you know, like your first point. Do they ever come back and say, hey, we panicked when we shouldn't have? Did they ever say that about Cory Gardner?
No, yeah.
Who has not banned birth control, by the way.
He's not. And has made no moves to it, has introduced no bills that would do it.
Yeah.
Like, none of it. How about, I remember before George W. Bush, when he was going for re-election, Cameron Diaz, remember her?
The actress.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a while, so I just wanted to make sure people were familiar.
Mm-hmm.
But she said that a vote for George Bush was a vote to
rape.
Legalize rape. Literally, I mean, seriously said that.
Surprisingly, it's still illegal.
Is it illegal still?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, shockingly.
That's good. I'm glad it's illegal. It's not a good policy. That's Gilead's policy, legalized rape.
Yeah.
We did not do that.
We didn't do it.
George W. Bush, because he was such a
rape.
Hardcore conservative that was just always pushing for those conservative policies.
Another fundamentalist,
man. Oh, my gosh. Didn't do that. There's never a reckoning, right? There's never a point where you look back and say, wow, you know what? None of that crap happened.
Well, how many predictions have been wrong about global warming? Every one of them?
And there's never
all
moment.
Of them?
Never.
There's never a reckoning for that?
No. I remember there was a book I read. I want to say it was Nate Silver's book a few years ago. And he wrote in there, it's a chapter on global warming. And he's no conservative. But he was writing about this and saying, like, look, you know, it's all about prediction models and how to make predictions. That's what the book is. It's called The Signal and the Noise. Mm-hmm. It's a great book. And so at one point he's talking about global warming and he's like, you know, I think normally what you would do, and he shows all the models and shows how typically these models have emphasized the potential for too much warming. Like they've predicted incorrectly how much warming there was. There was less warming in reality than there was in the prediction models. And over time, when that happens over and over again, you would adjust your expectations. Like that's how you make an informed prediction. You adjust your expectations. If you see these models are always too warm, you need to think about where it's going to go. And he got beat up. A guy on the left got beat up because just saying the idea that just admitting the actual facts that the models were overheated was too much for anyone to take, and to think that maybe we should readjust our beliefs and how we, you know, think about this. And he wasn't saying, I don't think global warming is real or anything like that. Bjorn Lomborg is another guy, a guy who said over and over again, he believes in global warming, says it's human caused. Mm-hmm. And says, but the way we want to spend money on it and our priorities need to be thought of in a much more methodical fashion. The guy is called a climate denier.
Amazing.
It's insane. It really
is. Sweet Pea, that's absolutely ridiculous.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
I will say there's a lot of great election debate analysis this week that you can go check out. It's secondary in my mind because there was the return of something called the National Football League last night, which is really
I love it.
I mean, it's a meaningless preseason game. It's the 12th string players, but I just loved seeing it on my television.
You know, I was channel surfing the other day and came across the Longhorn Network, you know, the Texas UT's television network. And just to kill time, because, you know, you got to fill 24/7 worth of broadcasting on a channel that just really covers
one team,
Texas football. And that's about it.
Yeah.
But they're doing a football game from 1976. It was Texas, Arkansas. And Keith Jackson was the play-by-play guy.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, none of it is relevant to today. I had no interest in either team. Just the sound of the voice and the fact that it was football. I must have watched it for an hour and a half. It's so embarrassing.
It's so bizarre.
Yeah,
it really it is. But I'm very... I mean, I like watching baseball. I like watching basketball. But there's nothing like...
There's nothing like football.
And for me, the National Football League, I know you are a more of a college guy. But still, it's just the return of it. It just feels good. It feels right. You know, especially when your options are watching Bernie Sanders or watching Kamala Harris or Joe Biden. That's not fun.
No, it is not.
They are trying to figure out, they're trying to sort something out here on the left. And I remember how the Republican primaries of 2016 just ripped the conservative movement apart, right? Like there were people who absolutely freaking loved Ted Cruz, absolutely freaking loved Donald Trump, absolutely loved Marco Rubio. People had some mixed feelings about Jeb Bush. There was passing interest in John Kasich at times. Not by him, his family.
Yeah, his mom.
His mom was very much is a Kasich person.
She was sort of divided. But,
she did wind up voting for Trump, but she's thought about Kasich for a while. But there was a lot of passion there. When you go back and think about that field, you know, I mean, you had people who made, you know, no impact in the race that were really good candidates. I mean, Bobby Jindal is a guy
who
turned around a state.
Yeah.
Was an incredibly executive. He's a Rhodes Scholar.
Yep.
He, you know, introduces a very detailed, very good conservative healthcare alternative and basically was at 0% until he dropped out. I mean, like that was a big field. But what was funny about that, and it wasn't funny at the time, is how much everyone basically hated each other that considered themselves Republicans or conservatives. Like everyone had their guy and hated all the other guys. And now we're seeing that on the Democrats and it's a lot more fun. It's like everyone who's a Kamala person hates all the Joe Biden people, and all the people who are Biden people hate the Kamala people, and Cory Booker hates Biden. There's like three people who are Cory Booker people who are also not in love with Biden.
Uh-huh.
So Biden was asked on TV this week about, is the party going too far left? Are we getting a little out of control here with the movement towards, let's say, socialism? Here's what he had to say.
Your party has changed as well. Do you think it's moving too far to the left, even on immigration, where some of your fellow Democratic candidates say that they want to decriminalize those who cross the border illegally?
Well, look, it's not about moving left or right. I think I represent the party. I think my views are where the vast majority of the Democratic Party are. There's a lot of really, really good people that got elected who are really pushing the envelope. And it's good. It's healthy to do that. But the idea that they represent what the party is today does not comport with who gets elected. Does not comport with how we won last in 18. It does not comport. And so, but it's a totally legitimate debate to have. The one thing we have to focus on, and the one thing I agreed with Corey on last night, let's focus on what it is we can do together. We are so different. Every one of those people on that stage has a fundamentally different view than Barack. They talk about Barack, but they have a fundamentally different view than the present President of the United States is. And let's argue who has the best path forward to lead this country to greatness.
I mean, I think he's right on that, right? I think other than does not comport that he kept saying over and over again, he's probably right. Like he probably is a better representative of the average Democratic voter than someone like, you know, Bernie Sanders. But the activists are the ones that are voting in the primary. They have all the energy. AOC's on TV.
They get all the
attention,
too.
They get all the attention.
Which makes it really tough for somebody like him.
Biden's no moderate, as we pointed out a million times.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that, you know, like the moderate position of only free college for 2 years is the Joe Biden position. That's not moderate. That's something that Obama didn't. Did he even suggest that? Barack Obama
not that
even.
I
don't remember him suggesting it.
No.
I mean, I'm sure he would have loved it. But now the idea that if you don't go for 4 years of college for free and a free job and universal basic income and let, you know, people cross the border with no penalties and give them free health care, if you're not that person, you're psychotically right. You know, I don't think that's the reality for the voters. And it's probably why Biden's winning right now.
888-727-BECK.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. 888-727-BECK. NFL.
You're back.
I'm back to the NFL.
Well, I thought we were going to go to this Kamala Harris clip about employee-based insurance. You don't want to...
No. No, we're not.
I've got that right here because she's trying to defend.
All right. I'll wait for... How long is this clip?
This one is a little over a minute.
Is she talking about the NFL?
She may discuss that at some point Let's listen. Here's Kamala Harris talking about whether she's going to eliminate employer-based insurance.
One of the things that has been charged is that you will not be able to keep your private insurance if we get insurance through CNN, if GM workers get insurance through GM. Under your plan, they will not be able to keep that private insurance. Is that true?
What the conversation was about whether you can keep your private insurance through your employer. My plan will separate your health care from your employer, meaning your employer will no longer dictate the kind of health care you receive. Under my plan of Medicare for All, private insurance companies will be able to provide coverage if they play by our rules. And therefore, what that means in a very important way is that you don't have to be wed to your employer to keep the insurance you like and that you need. I am decoupling it. So there will be private insurance. There will be private plans.
This is interesting.
But it will not be coupled with your employer, so you can have choices about where you work and where you live.
And I understand the portability argument.
Yeah, that
is
an important choice.
It is very important
here. But what you have to convince voters of is that yes, they may be able to keep a private insurance, but it's not their private insurance, correct?
No, they get to make the choice.
No, because you're basically allowing for a Medicare Advantage plan where insurers can enter that plan and they can choose it if they want to. But if you're getting insurance from GM, from your employer, you will not be able to keep that, correct?
Right.
You will have 10 years to transition.
She's trying so hard to.
The insurer who has partnered with GM is going to then have the opportunity to compete in my Medicare for All plan. And so you as the consumer can choose under my Medicare for All plan to have a public plan, a government-sponsored plan, or a private plan.
She didn't say a single thing about the NFL, Stu. I feel really deceived here. No, she didn't talk about the NFL at all.
Really?
No.
Maybe we cut the clip off too early. I think she went into the Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver situation after this.
Really?
Yeah, right after this. Is Tyreek Hill hurt? We don't know. because this is a shade different than a Bernie plan, right? Where she's saying, first of all, it's going to take 10 years to transition. Second of all, what she's saying is, in theory, you could get a private insurance plan if you want, right? But you cannot get it through your employer. Now, the idea of separating employer from insurance is not a liberal idea. That is it's an idea that I would say most economists on the left and the right think it would be good.
Plus, can I just point out, you can choose your insurance today because you don't have to take a job where an insurance plan you don't like is offered. You don't have to take that job.
And you can refuse it.
You can refuse
it. It's just it's so much a better deal, right? Like you're going to, because your employer is paying for part of it and they get a group discount rate. So everyone takes it. Like I, because I am very friendly to the idea of having insurance separate from my employer. However, the insurance here is good. So I take it, you know, and I think that's what everybody does. I think in a perfect world, this would be a good thing. Like the idea that you're tied to your employer with your insurance is actually not a thing that Kamala Harris is making up. Like, conservative economists have been arguing for this forever. They're just saying go to a free market system on the other side of that.
Yes.
She's saying you're
going to allow competition state to state.
Yeah. And that's a big part of it, too.
Takes care of a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. And she's saying, okay, well, we're going to give everybody a government plan. And then I guess if someone wants to come in and try to compete as a private plan, they will. Her argument and her belief is, what they will do is subsidize these plans so much no one will pick the private insurance, and eventually private insurance goes away anyway. Like she's trying to do it a little bit through the back door, where Bernie's just saying it. He's just coming out and saying, we're getting rid of it. It's going to be illegal for you to have private insurance. So there is a little bit of a shade, I suppose, of difference there. But you just see these people try to struggle to get through and say exactly what's happening with their own plans. She can't admit that healthcare is going away. If you have it through GM, if you have it through CNN, you're not going to have it there anymore. It's over. And that is something that polls in the mid-20s nationwide, mid-20s. And they don't want to admit it because they know how unpopular it is, but that is what their plans will do. Bernie Sanders was on as well, and he's basically running a president vice president thing with Warren. They're just trying to figure out which one's first. I don't think either one would name the other as their candidate, but they're running essentially an alliance right now, like an old school survivor alliance. Mm-hmm. And they're working basically together to fend off all these attacks, and all their policies sound almost exactly identical. So CBS was asked Bernie, can you explain what is the freaking difference between you and Elizabeth? Listen.
At some point, you and Elizabeth Warren, as most pundits seem to indicate, will make that next debate. How will you differentiate yourself from her? You're two progressives.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll let you guys and the punditry and the American people make that decision.
What?
All I can say,
what is the single principle difference? What is the biggest difference between you and Senator Sanders? It's not up to us. You've got to draw the distinction, Senator.
No.
No?
I have to tell the American people what I believe. And I'm going to take on the greed of Wall Street, the drug companies, the insurance companies. We are going to tell the fossil fuel industry that they cannot continue to destroy this planet for their short-term profits.
I'm fascinated by this. I am fascinated by this. First of all, of course, he's got to draw distinctions. I mean, if not, people are going to do it for you. Mm-hmm. You know, she's going to wind up beating him in this because he's just so curmudgeonly and awful.
Terrible.
But beyond that, what he just described as his philosophy was to say, I think it was four different things were really bad. Those four things are basically the fundamental basis of our civilization.
Mm-hmm.
Fossil fuels.
Yes.
Right. Medicine. Right. Mm-hmm. Healthcare.
Pharmacies.
It was pharmaceuticals and health insurance. And the last one was Wall Street. And you might say, well, Wall Street's not the fundamental basis. Well, it is. It's the foundation of capitalism. You know, the first stock was ever sold was in the 1600s back in the Netherlands. And that was the foundation of how capital gets moved around and eventually creates the foundation of capitalism. I mean, so Wall Street, while you can criticize things at all four of those groups, they are the fundamental basis of our civilization if you eliminate, you know, things like faith, which obviously are important to some but not all. But, I mean, when it comes down to just human things, these are the greatest things that have ever happened to us.
And
their whole platform is just opposing them.
Yes. They just demonize them. That's all Sanders does. That's all Warren does. That's all Harris does. Mm-hmm. That's what they do. They just demonize.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.